It's been rightly said, I think, that all religion begins in discontent. That is, a person who is totally satisfied with the way things are is essentially irreligious. But then we have to begin to qualify immediately. Because there's all kinds of discontent. I don't have enough money. I'm not beautiful enough. I don't have enough friends. We're not talking about that kind of discontent that can be satisfied by anything on my agenda of felt deficits. Rather, it's a kind of bone-deep disease with the way things are. This is not the way it's supposed to be. And you can look at Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and every one of those religions locates the source of that discontent variously. This is precisely why they're different religions. So we Reformed Jews go back to our sources to find out, well, what is the root discontent that marks the whole pattern of Jewish and Christian thought? Well, the Jews put it out very clearly in, again, the fall story in Genesis. The result of the fall was estrangement, alienation from each other and from God. The woman you gave me made me do it. No, the snake made me do it. And then, of course, that gives rise to the violence whereby Cain kills Abel. And the connection is very clear. Why do people get violent? What is the source of all violence on the face of the earth? I think it is pretty clear, at least from the Christian point of view, it's fear. Somehow I am afraid for myself. And personally, I'm afraid of myself as well. And violence, I think, in whatever form, whether domestic violence or what's going on in Iraq, Palestine, Lebanon, the Congo, Darfur, wherever, is simply a playing out of that fundamental insecurity. The fear for myself, the fear for my own well-being or the well-being of my tribe. This is important context because when you hear this, and it ought to be announced with timpani and trumpets, this astonishing proclamation of Paul here, which has no direct context in the rest of the letters of the Galatians. I strongly recommend you read that doctrine. For freedom Christ has set us free. Period. And that ought to stand as a superscription for anything that's done in the name of religion. Documents, institutions, laws, patterns, traditions, whatever. That's the criterion by which all of that churchy stuff, we who play church, need to constantly go back to see, does this fit? Does this fit? Is this liberated? And liberated from what? Precisely from fear. Fear for myself. Fear of what the other, I can imagine, is going to do to me. So as I said, it's much deeper than all of my normal wants. The discontent. It is born in awareness of just how tightly my life is circumscribed by fears of all sorts. Stephen Heller, that interesting novel, the title of which I just forgot, starts in the first place. I work in an office where I'm afraid of seven people ahead of me. The seven people ahead of me are afraid of 13 people ahead of them. The 13 people ahead of them are afraid of the 20 people ahead of them. And then this past week I read an astonishing statement from the the great Chilean theologian Pablo Richard, who described the church as dominated by fear. Priests are afraid of bishops, bishops are afraid of cardinals, cardinals are afraid of the Pope. I thought, oh, Pablo, come on. But I'm not so sure he's very far off the mark. And the thing that makes it so tragic is that for freedom, Christ has made us free. And as I said, that ought to be the hallmark of everything that goes on. And therefore, if we can somehow, as the first letter of John puts it very apodictically, he who's afraid is imperfect in love. If somehow we are able, by the grace of God, to transcend this encompassing, suffocating fear, which for me has become as normal as the skin on my hands, and as familiar, then there is no question, it seems to me, that the violence that I so readily react with to so many situations in my life is short-circuited. It will not happen. It will not happen. For freedom, Christ has set us free. And the whole point, as Paul will detail in the whole rest of his letter and does here, is that to be free from fear and violence is therefore to be free for each other. He will say later in the letter, bear each other's burdens, and so you will fulfill the law of Christ. The gifts of the Spirit are patience, peace, kindness, gentleness. And those are not just, as the Greeks would have it, just personal virtues. They are connected. They connect us with each other. Because I'm not peaceful or patient for my own sake. I am peaceful and patient and gentle and all the rest of it in order to accommodate the other. And that's what we're called for. For freedom, Christ has set us free. A marvelous vision. And maybe we have to start with an acknowledgement or the search for those places in our life where we are not free. Those anonymous locales in our lives, in our psyches. We say, oh, I'm just here. No, you're not just there. You are, in fact, a nefarious presence in my life. We were there circumscribing, truncating, diminishing the fullness of my life. So again, this statement, this kind of lapidary statement, ought to be at the forefront of our heads. For freedom, Christ has set us free. And then maybe the first step we can make is to say, we really are not free. And that's, I believe, the beginning of liberation.